Because Japanese tenancy laws don't allow anyone to enter a tenanted property unless it's by the tenant's request, like for maintenance or what. But there's no in periodical inspection like you have in Australia, not even when you change ownership. So you're basically buying sight unseen. We can try to estimate based on the tenant profile and how long they've been there, what kind of renovation you'll be looking at if and when they move out. But that'll again be just assumptions. So if you have somebody living there, let's say about a year, year and a half, and we have photos from before they moved in and they're kind of, neutral profile, like let's say a single company employee or a teacher or something of that sort, then we can assume there's not much to be renovated at the moment. But if you had, for example, an elderly, destitute, single pensioner in their 60s or 70s who never opens a window and smokes like a chimney for 15 years, then obviously that's going to be a big red flag. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, just before we get into today's episode, you may have already missed it, but if you happen to be listening to this episode today or tonight when it's actually being published, you might still be able to grab your discounted early bird tickets for next month's summit in person or in Tokyo or online via a streaming ticket. I'm recording and hopefully publishing this today, Wednesday, 12th March, 2025, and the discounted tickets are only available until tomorrow, Thursday, 13 March, Japan time. So if you don't want to miss out on the cheaper tickets, hurry over to summit.realestate.jp and nab that discount today. Like, seriously, this is the last day. But even if you've missed it, the normal price tickets are still very good value thanks to our awesome sponsors, Innovatius, Kaku Accounting, Shiki Properties, and Axolotl Capital. And those tickets are selling fast. So if you want to hear from our amazing speakers, pick their brain and have some hands-on workshop session time with them, that's myself. Okay, maybe not all of us that amazing. Emil Gorgis, Tracy Northcott, Shumatsu Opost, and Brett Lee, Anton Warman, Blanca Kobayashi, Hiroshi Shimizu, Alicia Kin Wang, and Chai Kanda. And most importantly, network and meet other Japan real estate property enthusiasts, buyers, investors, and professionals like yourself, live or in the streaming room Zoom chat, where you'll also be able to float questions directly to the speakers. So again, head over to summit.realestate.jp and grab those tickets. This is the biggest and best industry event in Japan, now in its third year, so really a no-brainer at all. All right, so for today's episode, this was a really good call with a first-time investor in Japan. He's based in Australia and has a modest budget of about 8 million Japanese yen. And so the first thing we discuss is whether it makes sense to purchase a single investment unit or two of them with that budget for diversity and hedging, which of course led us to a conversation about property and tenant profiles at various budgets. We then chatted a bit about renovations, DIY or outsourced, working with local contractors, and making sure that the work carried out actually appeals to potential tenants and what they'd normally expect in a rental property. The advantages and disadvantages of buying tenanted versus vacant properties, condo units versus houses, long, medium, or short-term tenancies, again, advantages and disadvantages of those. What are the implications of purchasing a non-rebuildable property or a leasehold property, for that matter? What sort of due diligence we do on various types of properties and how to verify if one can get a short-term stay license for it.
which locations work best for each type of rental arrangement. We also talk structural inspections, build years, average maintenance and repair costs, sewage and water supply options. And we do all this while analyzing some listings together. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, audio only version, you might want to check out the YouTube video instead. We'll link to it in this episode's show notes. And then to close things off, we also chat a bit about how to calculate yields, about investment in parking lots, and of course about our services and how we can assist our clients. So all in all, a very nice deep dive into all things investment related. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so before we jump into those properties that we were going to review and the documents that you had, did you want to give me the background again? Because you've changed your strategy a little bit, you said, right?
Maybe I was expecting too much with the amount that I was willing to spend as well. So, so I've narrowed that down to just like a certain amount, so 100K, maybe just over all up. But I'm after two properties and two
100K Australian?
US? Australian dollars, yeah.
Australian. Okay, so in Japanese yen, that should be about 10 million at the moment. Yeah, 9.6-ish. Yeah. That would buy you... Are we talking investment property strictly or something for holiday use as well?
For the most part, investment, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that'll buy you... Is that including purchase costs or is that just the listing price? Purchase costs could be up to, let's say, 15%-ish.
I was hoping that, like, say, 50K would include, give or take a couple of thousand, you know, over that, would include the whole purchase.
The whole purchase.
Obviously, without management. Ongoing management costs and stuff.
Yeah, the purchase costs themselves. So that leaves us with about 8.3 million yen. Yeah. So 4.1, 4.2 per property. It's doable. They're not going to be the best quality investment properties. They'll be a bit older and a bit more suburban, but it'll be doable. Just the yield will fluctuate a bit more. With older properties, building fees go up a bit more rapidly than something newer. And because it's less of an ideal property profile, then the tenant base is less than ideal too. So it's Japan. We don't have ghettos and slumlords and that, but we do have, you know, elderly destitute pensioners or entry-level salarymen or Southeast Asian students. So they just tend to be slightly less stable tenants. That's all. I mean, I'd be perfectly, to be perfectly honest, I am a big fan of diversity, but with that budget, I would maybe aim for a single asset because you'll get a better quality one. 8.3 is not that much even for a single asset, but it'll be a lot better than 4.1.
Right. Okay. So you're saying that if it's a bit over 100, like 20,000 of that would cover off all the costs?
I mean, we start seeing better quality properties when we hit somewhere between 6 to 8 million yen. So we could aim for, you know, suburban Osaka as opposed to, I don't know, like a suburban Chiba City or, you know, suburban Fukuoka or a bit more central Fukuoka as opposed to very suburban Fukuoka. So starts making more sense at 6 to 8 million. That'll be a better quality property. And with the total budget being about 8.3, breaking it into, again, it's doable. We help people buy investment properties as cheaply as that, but they're not the ideal investment property.
Right. Okay. If it's like one of those condos where it just needs like renovations, like a internal renovation, like new paint, flooring, a few updates like that. And I was to do that myself by coming there and visiting holiday/ doing work on it before it hits the market. Is that something that people do or?
I have a couple of customers who are the DIY type, so they do that. But you have to get used to how the Japanese do it because you want the property to look like a Japanese tenant would expect it to look.
Right.
they're all very cookie cutter in their life, in their taste here. So we want it to look, you know, as nice or as normal as other Japanese comparable units that are available for rent. Unless you're going to make it super fancy, there's always room for that. But if you're going to do standard renovations and trying to keep it on the cheap, just make sure you're doing it the way the Japanese expect it to look. So wallpaper, not paint, wooden or
oh, really?
Wooden surface on the flooring, not like wall-to-wall carpeting or whatever the case may be. I mean, look at a few other available listings for rent or for sale and just try to make it look like that. Also,
so not like a tiled floor, is it not something people do there? Or?
Well, firstly, it's a lot more expensive here, I think.
Okay.
And secondly, it's not the norm. I mean, fancier places do have tiled floors, but your typical studio slash one bedder, which is what you'll be getting for this price, usually have wood or fake wood flooring. Another thing is that you'll need to liaise on the work, depending on where you'll purchase, but most places would not have English-speaking companies that you'll be able to buy materials and get some of the work outsourced to. So you will still need to have somebody between you and the renovation company just interpreting, facilitating, managing the work that they will need to do. I'm assuming you're not going to be doing every, I mean, for example, if you need to replace a bathroom or a kitchen, would you still do it yourself?
Well, maybe just the demolition, the removing of walls. Maybe I'll sheet the walls and then get the trades to do like the tiling. I won't be doing that. That's for sure.
So again, Japan being Japan, the typical bathroom is not going to be tiled. It's not going to be a shower. It's going to be if you've ever been to a Japanese hotel, business hotel room, like those single unit baths, that's all plastic and self-contained kind of thing.
Yep.
That would be the cheapest. Okay. And again, what the tenants would expect. You have to have a bath. Only very recently do very young kind of professionals go for the whole shower, bigger bathroom, as opposed to a bath taking up the entire space. But those are not going to be your target tenants with a property like that. So you want to make it, again, as typical old style one room, one studio unit in Japan. So depending again on where you'll be purchasing, I don't know if you'll need only materials or you also need some work done. I'm assuming you need at least some work done. So you would need somebody to help you communicate with the contractors. Shopping for materials you can maybe do on your own, but anything to do with contractors, you'll need at least a little bit of help. If you go with the English-speaking renovation companies, they tend to target a higher-end market, so that would not be very cost-efficient. But why are we thinking we're going to need a renovation? We're hoping to buy something that's been recently renovated, I would hope, or if it already has a tenant in there, then hopefully...
That would be ideal. You made me think with the purchase costs, that must mean that it's like not in the best state, so...
Oh, no, no,
but
no,
normally,
no.
Like, I don't
know. No, no, by purchase costs, I was referring to the realtor fee, legal and registration fees, the purchase tax statement, that all amounts to about 15% on cheaper units.
Okay, right.
Yeah, what we'll be doing is, so one of two options, both have pros and cons. We'll either be buying vacant in a good location where we think it'll be fairly easy to populate quickly. And the advantage of that is that we'll get a unit that's been recently renovated. They'll usually renovate them before they sell them, right after the last tenant moved out or after the owner moved out, whatever the case may be. But you'll be buying straight into building fees and expenses rather than straight into income, because you'll have, you know, a few months before you can find a tenant. And the rent that we were assuming that we'll be getting will be just that, will be an assumption. We won't know until we actually advertise and see the responses, whether that's, you know, we might have to reduce the rent. So what we assume in the beginning might not actually be the actual yield.
Right.
The other option is to buy something which already has a tenant in it. That's called the owner change in Japan. So you're buying straight into income, but then... Because Japanese tenancy laws don't allow anyone to enter a tenanted property unless it's by the tenant's request, like for maintenance or what. But there's no in periodical inspection like you have in Australia, not even when you change ownership. So you're basically buying sight unseen. we can try to estimate based on the tenant profile and how long they've been there, what kind of renovation you'll be looking at if and when they move out. But that'll again be just assumptions. So if you have somebody living there, let's say about a year, year and a half, and we have photos from before they moved in and they're kind of, you know, neutral profile, like let's say a single company employee or a teacher or something of that sort, then we can assume there's not much to be renovated at the moment. But if you had, for example, an elderly, destitute, single pensioner in their 60s or 70s who never opens a window and smokes like a chimney for 15 years, then obviously that's going to be a big problem.
Yeah, okay. All right. So it's
but both are options. So we can buy vacant. I would only buy vacant if it's a very good location, or we can buy tenanted.
Okay. All right.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
All right. So with that budget, you're leaning more towards the condo, not a small apartment, like a house inside a small apartment or maybe a detached house or...
Well, a house or a townhouse at this price range is going to be a old, fairly dilapidated wooden structure. It's not going to be in as central a location. It's going to be a lot more rural / suburban, just because it comes with a land plot and land is what's expensive, right? So for that same budget, you'll be buying very distant from large metropolitan centers. And old wooden houses in Japan are not really built to last. So at that budget, I wouldn't go for that, because once they get past 30 or 40 years and you'll probably be buying at least that old, if not older, they'll start racking up the annual expenses for maintenance and repair. And that can be very unexpected and very unstable and a bit of a hassle and also very uncertain yield. So unless you're planning on an Airbnb operation or something of that sort, I wouldn't go for single family homes or townhouses. And even then, I'd go for a much higher budget.
Okay. Well, what sort of budget would that be, roughly? Like, because I'd only then be able to buy sort of one, wouldn't I? Maybe.
For a house that you're going to be renting out, what, long term?
Like, if I had the option of either doing long term, medium term, or short term.
Yeah. With houses, I wouldn't go for long-term again, because yield is kind of low as is with long-term, right? In most places in Japan, whether it's a house or a condo unit, I wouldn't expect much more than 5 to 6% before tax. So that coming from a house where suddenly you'll have the roof go for 20,000, or you need to renew termite protection for 6,000, or there's cracks in the foundation, which is like, I don't know, 15,000. So with houses where we need to worry about the structural integrity and maintenance and repairs, I probably wouldn't go with long-term leases unless it's a brand new house, or let's say under 15, 20 years.
Right. What about if your intention is that, say, you're buying a house and then what's this issue about where that you can't rebuild? So does that mean, that would mean you can't put a pre-manufactured house on it, like demolish the existing place, put a pre-manufactured house on there, could you? It just means you can't rebuild at all.
With a prefab, it would
depend. Does that apply everywhere? Or?
It does, but there's quite a few caveats to that. So first of all, as long as the foundation and one or two or more of the supporting walls are still intact, and the actual, you know, extent of that is up to the local municipality, it can differ a little bit. But as long as the foundation and at least one of the supporting walls are still intact, anything you do will be considered a renovation, not a rebuild. So then you can do whatever you want. If it does get completely demolished, the foundation is gone, like let's say in the case of an earthquake, then you won't be able to rebuild, but your insurance policy will cover you for the price of constructing a new structure. So you're buying, you'll get more than the cost of the property because they're going to be paying you for the new construction of a new property, which is about 15 million yen usually. But right. You will have to purchase another land plot to build it on. So you'll get 15 million, which you'll be able to use to reconstruct, and you'll need to spend another 5, 6, 7 million, depending on where we purchase, to get another land plot. And then you would be able to rebuild there with the insurance payout. And lastly, rebuildable is not an issue when selling as well. So there'll always be cash buyer. I mean, banks won't lend for a non-rebuildable property, but you'll be limited to cash buyers, but you'll still be able to resell them.
Right. Okay.
And then with short-term and medium-term, it's doable with a house. I would advise to make it a nice house. So maybe start looking at a budget of, let's say, 15, 20 million. And then you would be a lot more hands-on. With short-term, you'd definitely be a lot more hands-on. You'll have a company manage it for you, but you'll need to constantly be looking at occupancy rates, vacancy rates, what the competition is charging, how to differentiate the property over others to attract more guests. It'll fluctuate a lot more with seasonality and tourist numbers. So not a full-time, but definitely a part-time business that you'll need to be on top of and have the mental bandwidth for.
Right.
Medium-term or monthly stays are a bit of an in-between. Like, you won't be as hands-on as you would be with short-term stays because people would stay for a month or two or three or even 6 or 12 sometimes. You could potentially make more money than a long-term rental if you have good occupancy rates. The problem with monthly is that not everywhere has monthly management companies that we can work with. So depending on the location we'll be going for, I would first check the availability of monthly management companies in those areas, because that's kind of a rare type of property manager that's not available everywhere.
Right. Okay. And there's certain areas that are restricted to having like Airbnb and Minpaku, is that right? Or?
Yes. Every local municipality has its own regulation. So the first step to... when we're researching a property where that's a must-have criteria, then we'll get a list of potential listings. The first thing we'll do is prioritize them in your favorite order, or, you know, based on order of our recommendation as to what we think would be a less risky kind of property. Basically, as young, I would normally prioritize the youngest ones first. And then we'll float them to a short-term stay research and management company. They'll charge 20,000 yen for the first property in every municipality that they investigate, and then 10,000 yen for all subsequent properties in the same municipality. And they'll provide a detailed report on the likelihood and feasibility of obtaining a license for that property and what can be done to it, if anything can be done to comply if it doesn't comply. And there are two types of licenses they'll investigate for you. One is the short-term stay, the casual short-term stay one, that's called Minpaku in Japan. And the other one is a full-on yokan/hotel license, which, you know, sounds bombastic, but it's not that hard to get. if we can go for the hotel license, if the property would comply with that, then that enables you to operate it throughout the year, whereas the casual license is up to half the year, 180 days. And then you'll need to fill in the rest of the time with monthly rentals.
And that'd be the approach most people would take? Like,
if short-term rent is a must-have criteria. Otherwise, we can just aim for, you know, the best property that might work for monthly and, you know, maybe after settlement, then try investigate whether it'll also get a short-term stay license.
Right. Okay.
But if you want to be hands-on, then I'd say long-term leases in condo units are the best way to go. Because any of those other alternatives will require more regular attention from you. Like the monthly, once you have a tenant in the monthly units, they'll probably stay there for a month or at least a few months, hopefully a few months. But if and when they move out, you're starting the quest for the next guest, and that can take a while and require a lot of tweaking. And with short-term stays, you're doing it all the time, every couple of days or a few weeks, right?
Yep. So that's where you have someone like Tracy to manage that, right? Tracy Northcott or something?
If it's around Tokyo, that'll be her. But Tokyo has much lower yields than other places. So, and also your budget, the current budget we're discussing will definitely not suffice in Tokyo and surrounds.
Hmm.
But there are others in other parts of the country that we can work with. That research company that I've mentioned also does management all over the country remotely, as long as they can install electronic locks and as long as they can find cleaners in that area to work with. They can also manage it remotely. It's better to work with a company that's, you know, on location and hands-on and more high touch like Tracy does, but not all locations will have those companies that we can work with. So we'll need to find out based on your preferred selections. We'll need to find out which company is the most feasible. If you want to go for short-term stay, a casual license and be operating throughout the year, you can aim for Osaka City and Chiba City. They're both short-term stay friendly municipalities that allow you to rent out throughout the year.
Yeah, so I've sent through a couple of listings to you if you wanted to analyze those. And so, as examples from those areas, I'm pretty fairly sure I selected Osaka.
Yeah, let me just open that. Give me a second.
But they're not exactly the condos as you. Well, some of them are. There's a couple there.
That's the links, yeah, not the Word documents.
Yeah, the links. I guess it takes you through. So a key amount, and then it takes you through to the realtor to the advert. Okay.
Let me share my screen. Okay.
The other question I wanted to ask was the lease. Story with the leasehold?
I wouldn't advise to go for leasehold. They're going to be losing value a lot more rapidly. You'd have a much harder time selling them because not many people want to buy them. And if and when, depending on the type of leasehold law, I can't remember which is which, but there's old leasehold law and new leasehold law, depending on when the lease was drafted. One of them can be renewed in perpetuity. The other one can not be renewed if the owner chooses not to renew it. And then if that's the case, you'll have to pay for demolition and removal of the house. So unless there's a very compelling reason to go for leasehold, we normally wouldn't do that. With this one, before even clicking on the realtor's link, I can tell you that 1957 I would avoid. This is not, again, they're flimsy. They're not built to last. It's bound to have some major structural issues when we'll do a structural inspection on it. If you aim for houses, I would go much higher with the budget. Well, realtor's website, see what's in there, but I don't think I'll find any pleasant surprises. Give me a sec. Not too many photos, which is not promising. So 1957, bad. It's connected to water supply and sewerage, which is good. Floor plan is relatively small, which is also good. You'll be paying less for renovations and repairs and structural inspections. But if you're going for stuff that's this old, I would expect that you'll be doing structural inspections on quite a few potentials before you land on one that, you know, kind of half miraculously doesn't have any major structural issues. And that means that each of those structural inspections will cost, let's say, 1,000, 1,500 Australian. So you do too many of those, you're already eating very severely into your budget, right?
Yes. Yep.
And then let me open the second one. 1965. Okay, so same story. I mean, if you're going for houses, I'd stay as close as you can to 30 years and younger, if you're going for condo units as well, for different reasons, but interior looks a bit better on this one. They've done some of it. Water, sewage, I'm not seeing. Oh, yeah, water and sewage is fine.
So yeah, you'd definitely mark all those off. You'd scrap those.
I would not touch anything older than, if you have to, maybe 40 years, but these are all much older than that. So I personally wouldn't. There, you're going to be, even if there's nothing wrong with the structure, which again would be a miracle, you'd still be paying a good $4,000 or $5,000 a year in just annual maintenance and repairs on a structure this old. On average, I mean, you'll have, you know, 5-6 years where everything's okay, and then the roof goes.
What about the areas they're in? Are they not too bad? Sorry? Or what about the area that they're in, those properties?
Well, Higashi Osaka is close enough to Osaka City itself. It's not officially Osaka City, but it's close enough. Asahi Ward is within Osaka City itself, but short-term stay guests would need more central locations, or at least very close to some kind of tourist attraction. Too suburban, too rural is not gonna. Sorry,
like Namba.
Yeah, so the area between Umeda Station to Namba Station is usually where you'll be attractive enough to guests. We can float any location. I'm not the expert on that. So we can float any location, again, to local property managers and ask them what they think would, you know, if they think that's a profitable spot or not.
Okay.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Basically, very clearly said that, you know, potentially be profitable from short-term rentals, you want to aim for a budget of 25 million and over in Osaka, and 40-50 million and over in Kyoto, and these are definitely not it. So I don't honestly think they'll do very well unless they're smack in the middle of the city. I mean, a superb location will always trump, you know, whatever condition the property is in, as long as it's not falling apart. But if it's less than an ideal location, then that property type would not be very profitable. Right. This is leasehold, so I'm scratching it straight off. Oh, that's the one we just looked at, isn't it?
There might be, was there a double up, was there? Probably.
No, 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 it was just me. I think I clicked on it twice. Okay, that's a condo, I'm assuming, yeah?
Yep.
It's looking a bit better.
And I think that's actually in American dollars as well, which doesn't help. I should have set it to Australian.
Well, 4.9 is about 50,000 Australian.
Yep.
At the moment, at least.
It says, see, this is what's confusing about the ads. They say you like 1 year old, but you look at it, you go into the ad, and it's not 1 year old, but they've just done a remodel or something, and they say that it's 1 year old. So,
yeah, some of them do that, but this one says 1990 even in the English translation. Oh, yeah. The text, you mean? Okay, okay. Yeah, yeah, they're referring to... Yeah, don't look at that. Look at the actual building.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit older than what I like to see on condo units, but definitely a hell of a lot better than everything else we looked at so far. This one would be long-term lease or maybe monthly if the owner union is not, you know, too much of a hassle with it. That's something that we would need to check, but the location.
I like that it's a smaller complex. Like, it's not like one of those larger.
Well, that's not necessarily a good thing because number one, for example, see here, it's the third floor out of four. It doesn't mention elevators, so I'm assuming that's probably no elevators. So you're kind of getting a bit too high for like elderly folks and single moms with lots of shopping bags, for example. Also, it might be self-managed. It doesn't say here. All consignment. So probably this one is one of the rare cases of a smaller building that's actually hired a proper management company. I'm assuming we'll have to make inquiries and confirm that. But a lot of the smaller buildings will be the owner union just trying to manage it on their own. Some of them are okay at it, some of them not so much. So that could potentially mean it's not that well managed, which could potentially mean that building fees will start going up more rapidly, or they'll suddenly hit owners up for a few thousand bucks each for repairs or what. So something to look at during due diligence is how they're actually managing it, if the reports look like they're doing a good job or not. But otherwise, I like it. 11 minutes, but it's not really that good of a location, I think, Ichikawa City, is it? Or is that the one between Chiba City and Tokyo? Oh, it is. Okay, okay. Yeah, maybe. I don't know if it'll be okay for monthly rentals with that location, but definitely should be somebody living there. So 11 minutes to a station between Tokyo and Chiba City can't be that bad. But yeah, I would probably go long-term like rental with that one. Sorry?
I do like Ichikawa in terms of its location to Tokyo and even like the theme parks as well. Sort of,
yeah.
It's not too far.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's definitely better than all those houses we looked at so far. This is also Ichikawa City, built a little bit younger. Still, I would definitely do a structural inspection, but at least it's a little bit younger.
You know how it's got the car park there? Does that mean it's got parking or?
It's got the car park. I'm not seeing it on the floor plan. Where do you mean? Oh, this one?
Yeah, what's that there? Is that?
Yeah, that is a car park.
Is that part of the land or?
I would assume it is. Yeah, it looks like it belongs to this property. It'll be something to check with the agent, but I would assume so, yeah. And then how do I close out of it here? Oh, that's gone. That's gone. Sold or delisted.
So is that happening a lot now since it's become is that happening a lot now because it's become like it's the number one tourist destination at the moment? So people come in their droves. Is that common that they're only up for a couple of days and they're gone or?
That's always been the case since we've been in business. It's probably getting worse, not better, because there is more and more interest, but there's always a chance that, a couple of days later, a property will be taken. If it's a good deal, it's a very active market. It's second or third in size and transactions in the world. So they're not going to be on the market for long if they're priced right. 1966, again, I would probably avoid. Let me have a quick look at that. No mention. Oh, septic tank. Okay. So this one's on a septic tank, means an extra few $100 a year for maintenance and repair.
Is that
Okay.
does it have to get pumped out every year as well? Is that how it works there,
No,
or?
that's the old pumping system toilets. I would definitely advise not to purchase anything with those. They stink to high heaven, and you want to get it replaced or connected to city sewage, replaced with a septic tank. Or connected to city sewer. A septic tank has got bacteria in it. Somebody comes in a couple of times a year just to make sure they're still alive and functioning and it doesn't stink. The septic tank is
Right.
fine. It just means a few extra $100 a year in maintenance. But yeah, the property is kind of old. Matsudo City, where's that? Let's have a quick look. Yeah, that'll work as well. Similar to Ichikawa. A little bit further off, but also closer to the airport, I think. So, yeah. Not sure what the what's the train line looking from there to Narita Airport Terminal, something. About an hour? Oh, you have to go into Tokyo. Oh, no, it's not closer to the airport, is it? Huh.
What about Haneda? Is it closer to Haneda?
Yeah, probably about the same, I would imagine. Yeah, exactly the same.
Yeah, different direction. Okay,
Yeah.
that's pretty far. Yeah, an hour is pretty far, isn't it?
I mean, it's kind of like getting there from Tokyo. Nobody expects anything more than that. But I mean, if somebody can stay in Tokyo as opposed to staying there, which is kind of, very rural, kind of compared to Tokyo. So,
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Webdisk Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off. On again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. And his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Are there, you mentioned something about you guys do research to find possible options as well, or you don't offer that at the moment?
Yeah,
or?
We do that. So what we don't offer at the moment is the full purchase facilitation. So we can't do everything on your behalf, or you just need to talk to us and make bottom line decisions. That we can't do until middle or early next year. And that would have included us doing the research. But what we are doing now, until we, you know, catch up on the backlog and hire and train the new staffers that we're doing now, is I'll put you directly in touch with a foreigner-friendly agent. They'll do the logistics of the purchase remotely in English, same as we would have done, and they would also research more properties for you. They're not going to charge for that. We're going to be on an hourly retainer if you need us to consult you on the purchase in that way. So there's no point wasting our hours of the retainer and wasting your money if the agent will do it for free.
Yep. Okay. So yeah, I'm
doable anytime.
I'm ready. I'm ready for that. So if you can set me up with a realtor, English or foreign friendly.
I will. Let me just look at this last one. The studio ownership built. Where's the build here? Oh, 93. Okay, that's the youngest one we've seen so far. I love this one. Building fees are suspiciously low. I would expect them to go up very soon. And the price is also very suspiciously low.
Really?
That's officially Tokyo, and we're talking, what, less than 20,000, about 20,000 Australian? That is weird for me. I would be very interested in finding out what the gig is here.
It's not like a leasehold or a sublease or anything.
It says ownership, so it's not that. First of eight floors. I mean, first floors in a building that looks like, where's the exterior?
Oh yeah, that's the one I liked because it also had. Oh no, this isn't the one. There was one where it had a car park with it as well. So that's different.
There is a car park for the building, but that'll usually be the upper floors, fancier units that are reserved. But I mean, maybe. Oh, no, there is one. There we go. Yes, it does come with a car park. The tenant would be paying for that when you have a tenant.
Could you sublease that as separate?
You can try. We can try, but we haven't been very... It would depend on the location. This is in Tokyo, so we might be luckier, but... With other clients who have had a tenant move in who doesn't need the parking lot, we haven't been really successful in renting it out yet. We're still trying. I'm not seeing. Oh, wait, hang on. Oh, no, this is just the pass. Okay, it all makes sense now. You're just buying a parking lot. That's all you're doing here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
You're just buying a parking lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Then
which apparently is kind of already, it's already being rented, so it's kind of like a tenant. Hopefully you'd keep them for a good few years. But it's good, easy money. It's not going to be any maintenance expenses. I mean, not much anyway. And we're talking, they're saying, what, 19,000 a month minus property management, which I'm assuming is the same as a normal tenant property management. And then you're monthly fees are 4694 2230 minus 4694 minus 2230 times 12. So that's generating about 1400 bucks a year divided by let's see, how much would it cost you to buy that? So 1.9 million times 10% plus realtor fee.
Be about 22,000, 23,000.
24-ish.
Yeah, right.
24-ish with all the costs. Because the realtors have a minimum amount that they can charge now. Even for a property as cheap as that, they still charge 330,000 yen.
that's been in effect since July this year. So 2420, if we divide your annual income, which is 132,372 divided by 2420. Yeah, 5.5%. Not bad for Tokyo. Very good for Tokyo, actually. What's that?
But that, yeah, as you said, it's only the car park, right? So,
well, I mean, it's still a property. You're owning it. You're owning it. You know, it's fully owned. So,
because it said like condo, and then with the car park, I was like, oh wow, okay, that's pretty.
No, it's just the car park.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But it's actually, I'm very curious about this. If you'd be keen on trying that, I wouldn't mind, and it won't be too much of your budget. It's an interesting concept. I mean, it's currently rented out. The location is within. How close is it? It doesn't tell us how. 3 minute walk to a train station. So, I mean,
what train station is it?
Oh, our staffer is also asking which Yaguchi Watari, Tokyo no, otaku, wakaru, otaku, otaku, nani, samishi, otaku. Okay, she's doing some research. No, right. I don't think it's a good area at this price. I'm sure it's not. But somebody lives there, right?
Yaguchi.
Yaguchi Watari. Yaguchi Watari. Okay, she'll let us know if she finds anything. I'll send it to you on WhatsApp. But okay. it's an interesting concept. Never had a customer buy that.
I could maybe look at it as a buffer to if I was just to buy one property and then have something like that, then maybe.
I'm also curious if we could turn it into an hourly parking, which would potentially make more than a monthly fee. So if and when that guy doesn't renew their lease, or you know, when it's about to expire, you tell them you're not going to renew it, we could maybe experiment with coin parking instead of like monthly parking, right? That could generate a bit more, hopefully.
What about a hand car wash service?
That would depend on zoning regulations, but that's interesting too.
Yeah.
But then you're actually running a business. You'll definitely be on your toes constantly with that. Well, I guess with a coin parking as well. With a coin parking, you can't really tweak or change that much. I mean, you can change the price per 30 minutes or something, but every time you do that, you need to print a brand new sign, so you wouldn't be playing with it too much.
You're right, though. That's an option.
Popular area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Looks like a popular area, she says. She just did a bit of Googling on it.
Yeah, right. Does it give the actual dimensions, proper dimensions of it? Like, you know, 15 square meters or 10 square meters or?
34, 31.
Feet, is it?
No, square meters. 34, 31.
34, 31 square meters.
That's what it says.
That's pretty decent.
Maybe it's this one. Maybe that's, it's the double car park. Yeah, that looks like a double. I'm hoping they mean, or maybe it's all three of them. That'd be even nicer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be. It could be. All right, but buy it for me.
Yeah, you're getting excited. I'm getting excited about this now. I just hope, but seriously, this is speculative. We've never done anything like this before, so I can't tell you that I have any. I have zero test cases to refer you to. But I've invested $20,000 in a lot riskier than that.
Yeah. Well, how do I make it happen? Like, yeah.
We'll kick off a conversation with a foreigner-friendly realtor from Tokyo, and we'll get started. You just let me know I can just introduce you to them. Don't feel obliged to hire us. But if you want us to stay on and consult, give me a name and address, and I'll send the retainer on invoice your way. But regardless, I'll kick off the conversation with them now so we can get started. And they'll also research. Then we'll figure out what's your remaining budget, and then we'll also get them to research some other options for you.
Awesome. I've got to run to another meeting that's just sort of been dropped on me last minute. But
no problem. Sounds good.
I think we've covered a lot in that short time, I think, maybe.
Yep, definitely the basics, we found at least one interesting potential. Two of them, actually. I like the older, that slightly younger condo unit, too.
Yeah, and the one that got sold, that was a good option, too, I think, because I had that car park as well, car space.
Yeah.
Anyway, looks a bit, yeah, looks promising. All right.
All right. We'll start with the WhatsApp chat group with the agent and we'll take it from there.
You've got my email, don't you?
I do, yes. But WhatsApp is a lot easier. Everyone's a lot more responsive there. So we keep the email for official stuff, but to jump in with quick feedback and get somebody to take action, WhatsApp works a lot better.
Great. Okay.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ziv. See you, mate.
Thanks for your time. So there you have it. Nice and thorough conversation there about all things related to real estate property investment in Japan. And if you'd like to hear more about that from our experts, as well as meet and chat with other investors who already have done this or are just about to or maybe considering to invest like yourselves, today again is the last day to get that discounted early bird ticket for the Japan Real Estate Summit next month, in person in Tokyo or online via a streaming ticket, which are also discounted until the end of the day today. Hop over to summit.realestate.jp and grab your tickets today or tomorrow. They'll still be there, just not as cheap, but still very affordable. See you all there. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.